Blog Talk Radio.
Real sports guy. People's Radio. It's all that deep in your headphones. Allow me to introduce
the illustrious Queen Anne Pooh. Marcus the Game Changer. The Seventh Jackson. D. Will, the ill executive. He's like Suge Knight without the anger management issue. Phil T, the sports PhD. This dude is coming at you from all angles. He's got all the bases covered. There's not a whole lot about sports this brother don't know.
Can you dig it, sucker?
Featuring Ray, Justin Page, Eric Hamilton.
R&D fam is like, woo! Now, I blame it on Nintendo.
It's definitely a gin party around here. Definitely a gin party.
Don't bring any Kool-Aid.
It don't get no better than this, baby.
I want winners. You guys act like it.
Pick it up a little bit. Okay? Get your chin up. Smile. Smile. Anybody can be beat.
Don't get no more real.
All right, welcome to the Real Sports Guys, where real guys talk real sports. This is D. Wills taking out the lead in the Wheels of Steel, trying to keep things moving. Here tonight, the Game Changer is out there gallivanting somewhere around the country doing something. But we have a treat here tonight, and we have a great energy. We got a lot going on with the show. But before we get into it, I'd like to look to the cat. He like on the baseline. He kind of like, you know, like Perkins used to be. He sitting out there with the left hand, falling out of bounds, good to go. Phil T, PhD, how you doing, brother?
What's happening, D-Wills? Doing good, man. I'm a little, you know, licking my chops here with the Miami Heat losing in the finals. But overall, I'm doing well.
Well, we good. It's going to be a lot of basketball talk. And, you know, when you're on RSG and you talking basketball, you have to have my guy. Y'all know, he's the kind of guy that might pull the dog out tonight. Because you know he got some stuff to say tonight. Is my guy, Justin Page. How you doing, brother?
Oh, man, D. Wills, thanks for the intro, man. I'm doing great. Blessed to be here. Thankful that you guys are having me. Slightly disappointed that I don't have my man Game Changer on with me, but I love you two equally, and let's make it a good night.
Well, yeah, I've been excited. I know, you know, this has been a great, you know, playoff, a lot of twists and turns, and it's ending, and I was thinking, oh, it's so good to have Justin on tonight, man, so I look forward to hearing what you have to say as we get into this NBA season. You know, one of the things I want to say before I get started, you know, many people who listen to RSG over the years know that I'm an avid Steeler fan, and to know that the great Steeler coach, a coach that often gets forgotten when we're talking about people like Belichick and we're naming all these coaches, and, you know, he invented the multiple rings in football where he was coming at it, you know, out of the steel curtain days. But Chuck Knowles' death, you know, just taking a franchise that was like the football version of the Clippers and turning around and building into the dynasty. You know, for 40 years, they were just terrible. And he came along and they produced, you know, I think close to 10 Hall of Famers. He's someone that would be missed. And then I was meant to talk about, you know, Tony Gwynn. You know, we're going to talk a lot of basketball tonight. But, you know, Tony Gwynn's passing for me is significant because, you know, in a sport where you don't have as much African-American participation as you probably had in the 70s. And the way they described him, when they described Tony Gwynn, I didn't know. They described this guy that was a cerebral ball player and all these things. I said, well, he must be probably with a white ball player. And then I first saw him play, and I'm like, this is Tony Gwynn. And the way that he revolutionized the game using video, the way in which he studied pitchers, not only was he just, you know, a great athlete in terms of his timing and quickness, but with the bat, but the way in which he approached the game, revolutionized it in a way that's just common today. So, you know, we're losing these legends, you know, and for many of us are real sports guys, these are folks we grew up watching throughout their careers.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's difficult to start to watch them pass away when they have played such a significant role in our lives. So I just want to lay that out.
A guy like Chuck Noll,
you know,
I wonder if Eric Spoelstra, somebody like him, will be remembered in history similar to how Chuck Noll is forgotten, because Chuck Noll had so many Hall of Famers on his team, so many all-time greats, that, you know, I think some people kind of take a position of, well, he should have won those many championships with those players. But we know that, you know, coaching still is a big deal and still makes a big difference.
I mean, you're hitting it right on the head. I mean, he was a major part of helping with drafting these players, cultivating them. You know, particularly when you think about a person like Bradshaw and everything he went through his time and really staying on him. But, you know, not only drafting great talent, but then cultivating it. You know, yeah, I don't think you're right. I think sometimes it gets overshadowed by, you know, you've seen all these great players, you know, watching Mean Joe Green change the way I felt about football. It was the reason why I liked being a defensive lineman. That was my guy. But Chuck Noll was kind of the person that kept everything sane. The stories they tell about him, you know, making sure he got home for dinner and making sure his coaches got home for dinner at a time where people say, hey, you got to sleep all night or you're not really coaching. You know, but he found a way. He understood that it was quality over quantity and believed in that. So, yeah, you're right. I think he sometimes gets overshadowed by his the great players he had on his teams. And I think the you know, connection to Spoelstra might be great. I think his ability and his strength as a coach, I think, gets overshadowed by his big three. You know, people miss some of the subtle adjustments, some of the things that he does that, you know, other people who have coaching eyes see, they're like, that's brilliant, the way he's developed the offense. He doesn't get a lot of credit in the same way that you would say Chuck Noll did. So that's a lot going on. I want to make sure we acknowledge it, because we got a lot of basketball we're going to be talking tonight. I mean, we have a full plate. We're going to try and hit all these points. You know, we just kind of put a buffet out there. We try to eat everything, nibble and everything, but sometimes we get stuck on a certain kind of food. We might stay there a little bit longer. But we got a lot to talk about. You know, we think about the tournament. You know, we're going to have a lot to say. We have, you know, Under Rock's funky editorial. We're going to talk about the Spurs, because there's been a lot of talk about the Heat. But we're going to talk about the Spurs, and it's a unique theme that kind of takes me home a little bit about the funky editorial brought to us by Under Rocks. That's going to be important. We're going to do an analysis of the finals. You can't have Justin Page on the air and not get deep into this. It's like a waste of energy. You know,
we're going to get deep.
Stephen A. Yeah,
we're going to get
Stephen
deep.
A. We got Justin. Yeah, we got Justin. They talk about Stephen A. We got Justin. I put Justin up there, Stephen A. So we
deep
can't
is
do
an understatement, my friend.
Yes.
Deep
and,
is an understatement. We're gonna get into all this NBA Finals talk. And we're going to get into the future of the NBA, the Miami Heat, everything that you can talk about basketball. We're going to get into it tonight.
We're going to OD on it. Yeah, the World Cup's on, but we're going to still OD on basketball. And then, you know, Everybody talks about the greatest draft ever. And we will hold on this. You know, we've been, this 1994 draft, it's been on NBA, TV. You know, we're gonna pick in that a little bit because it's just something we want to do. And then we got to check what we have in the news, where we have a chance to bring up something that just in the news that kind of caught our eye around sports that we just want to share each other and talk a little bit about. And then we're going to have the Resistance Digital Dog of the Week as well tonight, and we're going to have the XL Academics Last Word. All of the any guests or, and all of the real sports guys are brought to you by Frederick Accounting. Frederick Accounting is the official accountant for real sports guys. You know, if you have business needs, try to develop your business services, just reach out to those folks at Frederick Accounting. You can get to them by going to realsportsguys.com. Click on the Frederick Accounting symbol, and then it will take you right to their site and give the folks a call. Let them know that the Real Sports Guys told you. And we're gonna have some fun tonight. We're going to have a lot of energy tonight. But, you know, we always, you know, have to kind of set the table a little bit. We had an interesting finals. It was a beatdown of epic proportions. It was the kind of thing that made me just, I realized when I watched Popovich sitting there, I just realized the greatness of Popovich. And so the theme for the funky editorial tonight, you know, I'm from Michigan, from Ann Arbor, and Bo Schembechler had this great saying, the team, the team, the team. He was saying it in the context of, you know, when you leave Michigan, after this, you go to the pros, you're going to play for something else. You're going to play for a contract. You're going to play for endorsements. You're going to play for your family. You're going to play, but this is the last time you're going to play for the team. But San Antonio reminded us of the importance of what Bo talked about in his finals. And so we're going to spend some time, but you know how we do it with the Funky Editorial.
Fellas, one thing we need to say. Shall we say it, y'all? Melvin, right. Jimmy, Coleman, Ryan, set. Everybody want to get funky one more time.
All right, fellas. Before we get started, so many people are trying to figure out what happened with the Heat, what they're going to do after. We're going to spend this segment talking about the winners because we want winners. We don't have time to spend time with folks who lost and they're crying about stuff. We're going to spend this segment talking about the winners. I'm going to start with Jim Field, and then I want to let Justin. I'm seeing it in the corner like a great MC waiting for me to pass the mic. I'm going to really make fun a little bit because he got nuts scratched out. So I'm going to start with you on this. What impressed you most about the Spurs team?
The thing that impressed me the most was how they just the level of ball that they played, the ball movement, the defensive philosophy, in terms of not letting anybody else other than LeBron get off. But I think the hallmark of the whole series was just how everybody on that team was a threat from the outside, with the exception of Twitter. And everybody on that team was a threat from the three-point line, with the exception of Twitter and Duncan. And we all know Duncan can take it out to 20 feet with no problem. To me, it felt like an international brand of ball. Like I was watching the FIBA championships or the Olympics, kind of like when the U.S. had those down years in 2004 and 2004, where they just got beat because teams are moving the ball and they didn't have the best collection of talent, but they had the best collection to make the best team. And so when you look at guys like Patty Mills, you look at guys like Boris Diaw, they did unique things that complemented their team. And so clearly everybody knows I was pulling for the Heat. But I had a hard time being upset that the Spurs won. I enjoyed watching them play. I mean, they play a beautiful brand of basketball.
Justin, I'm going to throw it to you. Same question. I think it's worth talking about this. What impressed you most about when you watched the Spurs game?
What impressed me most about the Spurs is their ability to get great shots.
Mm.
It sounds elementary. It sounds as if that's something that's so simple. But I feel like the Heat worked hard for every bucket they earned, while the San Antonio Spurs picked the Heat apart by way of giving up good shots to get great shots. There's not a single point in this five-game emasculation period. I won't even call it a series. I'll call it an emasculation period. There were I can count on one hand all the plays where the Spurs did not get whatever they wanted. And I think that is a testament to Popovich and his system. It's a testament to their organization. It's a testament to their coaching staff that had them that focused, that dialed in to that level and to that extent to where they had their offense clicking on all cylinders in addition to their defense. They said, all right, we'll let LeBron get his 20 a game.
Yeah.
You know, we'll let you get your 20 a game, but you're not going to get them easy. You're going to work for them. And we're going to take out everybody else. That was their game plan. They literally had the same exact game plan they had the year before, but yet Miami just didn't have enough in the tank to get it through. So as much as this is on San Antonio's greatness, you got to look at Miami's weakness to some degree as well. But I know that the conversation at the moment is focused on San Antonio, so I'll focus it on Pop's ability to make his team be dialed in and focused. I'll put emphasis on the ball movement that I noticed on the offensive end of the basketball and the defense they play on LeBron and others. I can't even get anybody else a real name. I'm just going to call them others at the moment. And, you know, I'll give it up to San Antonio. They should be back-to-back champs. They should – Duncan should have got – should have been escalated almost to MJ status because it should have been his sixth ring.
That's right.
Really, if we really look at it, you know, last year was kind of fluke for Miami. And at the end of the day, man, San Antonio was the better team. I've never been so wrong about basketball in my entire life. And I'll get more into detail when we get on the subject because it's troublesome to admit you're wrong, but I'm going to admit a wrong tonight on something that I vowed to never do.
We're going to get there because this is therapy for all of us. We all went with the Heat. We all drank the Kool-Aid. We all did it. So we will get there. Well, let's say, I think you hit a line around Popovich. You know, in all three of us have played basketball. We played organized basketball. We played in pretty aggressive, talented league situations. So we played against good talent. And a lot of the things that Popovich is asking people to do, we've known our whole basketball lives. Like, you know, pass to a better shot. You know, ball movement, making people make the defense work. All these things that, you know, for us, we learned for years. What is it that makes him, and I'm sure other coaches try to push that philosophy, but what is it about Pop? Justin, I'll let you go, because you kind of got in this and I'll go to Phil. What is it about Pop that makes it work for him? How does he get that?
I'll tell you, and it's quite simple. I look at Pop similar to that of a Coach K.
Mm-hmm.
And I look at their upbringing. I look at their demeanor. I look at their leadership history. Think about what makes America great as a country.
Mm.
It's our ability to come together as one, our ability to protect ourselves in case any country is being disrespectful and or wants to invade us. Coach K is as great of a coach as he is because he came up in his training through the Army. Popovich, similar enough, happens to be born right outside of Chicago, in East Chicago, and actually in Indiana. He was in the Air Force, not the Army, but Air Force is comparable to the Army, if you ask me. And the discipline that I feel like he learned in the Air Force, playing 4 years of collegiate ball in the Air Force while still learning the discipline of our great nation, I think all those things – when you go through 4 years of combat, not just on the basketball court, but in real life, learning how to protect a country, when you learn how to protect the legacy in basketball, I mean, that's, you know, compare that to what you've already done. Like, you know, basketball is easy to pop. Protecting the country is so vastly understated in this discussion. And if you look at all the coaches who had the regimen that Coach K had, that Popovich had, you have to really understand who they are as men. And they're born leaders. They're born trainers. And they want the best out of their guys, and they know how to get it because they follow the lead of those other leaders in our country. And while it sounds very cliche that we're the best country in the world, don't you think everybody wants to come here, and they want to come here for a reason? It's because you have the ability to lead and create your own legacy. And Pop did that when he accepted the job with the Spurs. I think he gets the best out of his guys because he knows he's disciplined enough in his own regimen that he can require greatness from his guys, but he can also teach them how to work towards that greatness. And I think he gets the most out of everybody. Like, we can praise Patty Mills. We can praise Danny Green. Danny Green was in the D-League 3 years ago. Okay? Pop gets the best. Boris Diaw got cut by the Charlotte Bobcats 2 years ago. Pop's got this guy looking like an all-star. Pop knows how to get the most out of all his players. And other than Duncan, he's never really had a first-team All-NBA caliber star like Phil Jackson had in all 11 of his championships. So I think Pop's demeanor, Pop's approach, Pop's communication ability, and his discipline that he's learned throughout his upbringing in East Chicago and what he learned in the U.S. Air Force, I think that led him to be the best leader possible of men. And there's no better example in the game, in the world, than Greg Popovich. That's my take on it.
There we go. He's getting warmed up, y'all. He's not stressing. You broke a sweat. Like, he shot around. He showed you a jump hook fadeaway, and Justin is in the building. We move over to Phil T. Phil, what's your analysis? What makes Pop great?
I don't know. I don't get it. I really don't. When he first started in the league, I just didn't get his scowl, and I just didn't get it. Clearly it's something he does behind closed doors to build that relationship with his players, but, yeah, I don't get it.
So, you'll see the useful. Yeah, this is a guy who this is what he studies. This is part of, he looks at how organizations work and, you know, all these different things, and he's speechless.
Yeah.
That goes into this deep analysis of history, and then you can be speechless. I don't get it.
I don't get it. Just be real honest with you. I don't.
I think there is a, and I think Justin hit on something. We've all played for a lot of coaches. But you know those coaches who really care. And they can push you. And I think when they told the story about Patty Mills, you know, when he recognized, you know, one of the important days in Australia around, you know, his upbringing as an Aborigine, that right there said all you need to know about Pop is that he understands how these little things about making connections is important to building community and continuity. That winning is about continuity. So even the philosophy around why we move the ball, share the ball, do we do, it's all about continuity and connection. And not afraid to sacrifice other things to do that. That's why he's working on things. Things you saw in this series were things he was working on in October, November, that he was tweaking over four. And that's the discipline piece, that he's sticking with that kind of adjustment. And that's something I don't see that many coaches do. When we juxtapose that to what, let's say, Indiana did or Oklahoma City, they did all that stuff. Coaches played all those players, adjusted, worked on those rotations. And when they got to the playoffs, they played with scared money. They played lineups. You know, if you look at OK City, you play all those young cats. They got all those key minutes. They play all those key moments down the stretch of games, only to not play them in the playoffs. Whereas Pop, everything he did with Patty Mills, so Patty Mills could do what he did in the finals. And he trusts that process. And players know that he trusts that process. And so part of what he does, he allows you to make mistakes. And that's the similarity with Coach K. Coach K does the same thing. If you watch the way he builds his teams, he lets these young kids make mistakes to play through them because he understands where he wants them to be in March, right? I think if you look at Izzo, he does the same thing. Izzo is probably the closest to Pop in the fact that he plays his deeper lines. He'll play lineups that he's preparing for March, and he'll play through players, even when he doesn't have injury situations. Pop does that better than any other coach I've seen. I think the only other coach I've seen way back in my lifetime, which I think Chuck Daly was great with that, playing those combinations, doing some of those. Those are things, you know, I was talking about the game changer. Those are things that coaches, particularly in the 80s and 90s, did really well. They understood the power of the second unit. They understood that you can manufacture the second unit by taking your second star and making the leader of your second unit and creating more opportunities for scoring. That kind of stuff you see Pop do with Ginobili. So you might not get those kind of scoring opportunities with Tony on the floor, but this other unit, you're going to have 10 minutes with this unit, and you're the featured guy, right? So at the end of the game, you're going to have 15, 18 points, but probably 10 of those came when you were with the second unit.
Yeah.
That's the stuff he understands well. So, but Phil T., this is a historic moment. I'm going to go back and listen to all our tape. If I ever had somebody who I consider is emerging world-class scholar in this area, and I was expecting the answer I heard from Justin, and he gave me, I don't know. Somebody take on that one. That kind of took me down. I didn't know what to do with that answer. I was ready. I had my notebook out. I was about to get on my pad. You're about to bring some analysis in. You're about to bring some theory framework in. And then you gave me a I don't know, and I just want to put my pen down. Like, what is this cat?
You know, honestly, that's one of the best theories developed when you see something that you just don't know how to explain.
you might, okay, the thing about it is, you might mess around and go research and send me some stuff through the email. I know you. So we're going to, but just, I'm going to give you another chance. This is a copycat league. What do you think you might see for other teams given what they saw from San Antonio, Phil? You think there's some things that people might take from this?
I do. I think that clearly San Antonio, you know, out of the 13 or 14 guys they have on their roster, I think either 9 or 10 of them are non-domestic players.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, clearly, other teams in the NBA, probably all the teams in the NBA, scout overseas. They must.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's 2014. They must. But there's something that San Antonio does to find complementary players. Often they get complementary players that have already played on other teams. You know, we always hear about Tony Parker. We hear about Ginobili and how they drafted him late and blah, blah, blah. But if you look at their roster now, a lot of their international players are guys that they got from other teams, like Diaw and Bellinelli. So, I don't know. It's they have some kind of system where they can get guys to buy in to winning. Clearly how Miami did the last couple of years, bringing in guys like Ray Allen and Battier, guys that were team-oriented and kind of knew their role. Like they weren't going to come in and be AI. They understood at that point in their career they had a specific role to play, and they were cool with doing that. And with San Antonio, they're able to do that with guys that are in the prime of their careers. So, honestly, I'm just in awe. I mean, this is a team that was down. Like, they had a couple of elimination games in the first round. Okay? So I was rooting for San Antonio to lose in the first round of the West, because same way I was with Indiana against the Hawks, because I knew that those are two teams, the Pacers and the Spurs, that would give the Heat the most problems.
Well, I mean, I think we've done a really good job of fleshing this out. And you listen to the Real Sports Guys, realsportsguys.com. You know, go to Real Sports Guys, follow us on Twitter and Facebook. Join us. We have people liking us every day. Join the movement. The Funky Editorial is brought to you by On the Rock. Get out there. Check out all the people on the Rock in Rockford, Illinois. They'd love to hear you, see you. If you want to learn more about On the Rock, just go to our website. Click on their symbol. It'll take you right to their website. You'll learn more about On the Rock's sponsors. The Funky Editorial. We're going to move into really getting deep into the finals. What happened? How did the beat down happen? You know, don't jump up to get beat down with a sauna play in my head. Justin, I'm about to release some stuff.
Man.
I'm going to start with a simple question to you, brother. I'm going to let you stretch. What happened to the Heat?
A lot happened to the Heat. And I want to get into it, but I have to digress just for a brief moment.
Okay,
you can't have
me
on the show without me not piggybacking on something somebody else said. So
okay.
I apologize if I make us go, you know, a little bit over.
Do your thing, man. I had you in the corner. Do your thing.
I don't think it's a copycat league. When I heard you mention it, I kind of twinged, and I'm like, why is it a copycat league? The Spurs won in the most unconditional fashion known to man. No championship in this decade, with the exception of the 04 Pistons, has won playing team ball the way the Spurs did. The way you win championships in the NBA is you get the best star possible and you let him go to work. And LeBron James proved that, Michael Jordan proved that, and so on and so forth. So I don't think it's a copycat league. I don't think that anybody has
Jordan,
the ability to mimic the Spurs, because nobody has the patience, the fortitude, or the wherewithal to do what the Spurs and Buford and Pop have done over the past 20 years, which is stay the course. Other teams need to just stay the course and not worry about what ESPN, when ESPN creates these stories, talking about you got to blow it up to get better. No, you don't. Miami was the second best team in the league this year. And, you know, that's not a bad place to be. So I don't think it's a copycat league, and I don't think you need to copycat San Antonio to achieve greatness. You need to stay the course and tweak some things along the way.
But I got to say, you got to admit, even with those great players, the two things happened with the Lakers and the Bulls. What changed them was ball movement. The triangle offense, what set Michael up, was the ball movement of the triangle that created different ways for him to score. When they were just doing a screen and roll, he was going to basket. That's when he was losing. When he was,
if Mike had to get 50 to win,
teams that
win
move the ball. The teams that move the ball, even with Mike, remember that the triangle, they were moving the ball. They want
you know how many points per game Michael Jordan averaged on all six championships? There
but
wasn't a single player within 10 points of him.
The point, but how did he score? He scored that. He didn't score just come down on the street and roll goal. He scored that on some movement. He was scoring in multiple ways, but there was ball movement.
I just watched MJ torch the Phoenix Suns in game 5. Mike didn't pass. Mike, the whole second half, I don't think he passed once.
But
all he did was get the ball on the elbow
home.
And torch anybody that was guarding him.
But
I know that's not what we're talking about.
You
I just
had
to digress.
You had cool coach.
Let me get
you had cool coach. You had Kerr. You had to stay home. You couldn't help out. You couldn't help out Pippen. You had to stay home. You had to stay home because he was threatened. So I'm not going to kill that. I'll let you get your point. It's your point. Now, go to the other point.
Now, what happened to the
Spurs?
So, the question is, what happened to the Heat, right?
Yes.
I'll tell you what happened to the Heat. Hero ball is the wrong term, but it's the closest term I can use to come to grips with what I think happened to the Heat. I think Spo got so outcoached by Greg Popovich, he said, you know what? LeBron, we riding your coattail. And you'll notice on game five, LeBron changed his tune in that pre-game huddle. He said, follow me, guys, follow me. He tried to set the tone in the first and the third quarter to start the game and to start the second half and said, follow me. And he became a scorer. He had 19 of 21 points in the third quarter. That's not a recipe for winning basketball against a team. One individual never beats a team. So while I don't think LeBron plays hero ball because he doesn't take every shot, mm-hmm. I think LeBron dominates every possession, and he owns the ball 80% of the time in a 24-second shot clock. And those advanced metrics that all these coaches nowadays are using proves that. And I believe that LeBron was doing way too much. That's why he cramped up in the first game. It had nothing to do with the Heat. There was 23 other players on the court that didn't cramp up, but none of those 23 players were asked to play 40 minutes. None of them were asked to lead their team in points, rebounds, and assists, and blocks, and steals, and to control the offense and become a point guard. When did LeBron bring the ball up the court?
Who does Spo go to when Chalmers gives you nothing? Who does Spo go to when D-Wade gives you nothing? Who do you go
Why do you think Chalmers became irrelevant? Because I used the term emasculation earlier, but Spo emasculated Chalmers. He made the man become a eunuch. He took Chalmers' confidence from all-time high, from hitting championship shots against Memphis in the championship game, to hitting championship guys to get 25 points in game five last year. Mario Chalmers is a ball player, but if you don't allow him to play the point guard position, he can't produce. You put the ball in LeBron James' hands.
The person who took his confidence was Popovich. Once he started missing, he became self-check. Now, we from Michigan. We know what self-check means. He was self-check.
It doesn't sound like you're interested in my opinion. I'll be honest.
I'm listening to your opinion, but I'm saying
Go to the last three games. D. Wills, go to the last three games. They took the ball away from Mario Chalmers. How can you take your ball away from the point guard?
They gave the ball away from Mario Chalmers the last three games.
They gave the ball to LeBron and said, LeBron, do it all. Dribble the ball. Pivot whoever's guarding you to death and make a play at the last second to either go to the bucket or shoot it to a three-point shooter who's not really a three-point shooter, who's a center, who used to average a double-double, 20 and 12, in Toronto. You can't change what got you to where you are. You know, LeBron ain't played point forward all season long. He let Mario Chalmers run the point, and he did what he was supposed to do, which was rebound, defend, and score. But Spo got nervous, said, LeBron, take over. LeBron asked the team to follow him, and I'll be honest. LeBron James, as great as he is, he makes role players better, but diminishes star players. So Dwayne Wade, he got reduced to garbage. I hear sports commentators saying he shouldn't make $5 million a year. They want D-Wade to take the veterans minimum. Are you kidding me? They say Chris Bosh wouldn't get $10 million on the open market. Are you kidding me? LeBron James diminished their value. And Coach Spo allowing LeBron to do that took away their ability to be successful as a cohesive unit, as a team. They should have stayed the course that they went to the last two championships that got them where they are and let Mario Chalmers run the point, let LeBron defend and score when necessary, and they would have been much better off than they were this year. Not saying they would have won, but they would have been much better off. They changed the game up because they saw they were getting their butts kicked, and they said, you know what? You're the king. Let's let the king lead us to victory, and he came up small for the third time in five NBA Finals chances.
All right. He's warmed up, ladies and gentlemen. You listen to the Real Sports Guys, realsportsguys.com. This is all good. Phil T, you've been sitting over there like a great analyst that you are. I want you to comment on what you heard, but I also want to say, you know, it seems like now D-Wade's getting a little heat, but Justin hits this thing about D-Wade. He says he's making it sound like LeBron calls that for D-Wade. Comment on what you think about what was wrong with the Heat. And then what's this about D-Wade? I mean, what is going on with D-Wade? And, you know, people jumped on Chalmers before they jumped on D-Wade, and D-Wade hadn't done anything. How are you looking at this as somebody who has been supporting the Heat through all this?
Well, I think the Heat had an outstanding season. I really do. Justin touched on this earlier. They came in second place. Clearly, they were built to win championships, but they came in second place. And I don't think that's anything to be ashamed about. They're one of the first teams, I believe, since the Celtics in the 80s to make four straight finals. Say what you want to say about the East, how it's weaker than the West. That's true. But that's still an accomplishment. If it wasn't such a big accomplishment, we'd see it more often than every 30 years. I think that so moving on to Dwayne Wade, yeah, I was frustrated the last couple of games because I just remember how Dwayne Wade, the type of player he was. He's tremendously better than somebody who should earn the league minimum or the veteran minimum. He's still an all-star in this league, but he's a different type of player. And the Dwayne Wade we saw 7 or 8 years ago when he was leading the Heat to a championship with Shaq was a guy that used his jump shot to keep you honest so that he could drive by you and get to the hole to create for others. Now it's kind of the reverse now. He uses the ability to drive by you as something to keep you honest, and he's clearly a jump shooter now. And it's tough when you're playing against good teams and, you know, jump shooters. Like any other jump shooter, you're going to hit cold spells. And to me, when they needed a bucket and they needed something to be created, Dwayne Wade just is not that player to consistently get things done like that anymore. And it pains me to say that. Do I think that the Heat can continue to win championships as they're constructed? Possibly. But it was frustrating at times for me to watch Dwayne Wade because he also didn't play as well as I've seen him play on the defensive end as well.
Yeah.
And that's something that even in the past few seasons, when he's had slumps offensively, he was still giving it to you on the defensive end, playing average to above average defense on, you know, typically pretty good wing players. When you look at some of the breakdowns when a lot of those open shots, oftentimes, Dwayne Wade was a culprit. LeBron James was a culprit. Guys are trying to do too much. And, you know, I kept thinking about Belichick. Do your job. Do your job. Do your job. You know, Ed George, do your job. Do your job. and clearly, Ed George is our college football coach at Beloit College. But, you know, clearly, the Heat were trying to do too much, and they were trying to cover a lot of the gaping holes on defense, and that left. And the Spurs are smart enough to keep rotating, Yeah, our best player is Tony Parker. Yeah, our best player is Ginobili. Yeah, our best player is Duncan. But guess what? We have trust in all these other guys when they're wide open because they're professional players. So, you know, I in no way thought that the Heat were going to lose in 5 games. I picked them to win 7. But looking back, the Spurs and the Heat, you know, Justin mentioned that, you know, the Spurs got a cheap championship last year. I strongly disagree with that. They won. The better team won last year. Whoever wins is the better team. And, you know, this year, like last year, those teams weren't separated by much, man. You know, you switch around 2 or 3 minutes any given game, the Spurs could have won that championship last year. And this year, the Spurs got better, and the Heat didn't. And I think that is a big difference. They didn't. Mike Miller was hitting shots for them last year. Battier was hitting shots for them last year. And you thought Rashard Lewis was going to be that guy this year. But between him and Ray Allen those last couple of games, it was painfully obvious that they didn't have guys to knock down open shots, and the Spurs did.
I think you hit on some good points. And I think part of it is that Spo realized that he didn't have the Mike Miller, the guy that could just come and fill in that gap and do it. That some of the people he counted on just wasn't delivering. You know, I think if you watch, when the Spurs realized that Chalmers was struggling, you notice they went at him. Every time Parker was on, they went at him. Every time he was on Mills, they went at him. When Joseph came in, they went at him. They tried to drive his confidence down. They could see that. And he didn't have many people to go to the bench. You know, I felt like he should have gone to some of those other guys like Douglas and some of these other guys who he played he had some other folks on the bench who are scorers that there are sometimes you got to stick those guys in to give you something. The only core guys you stick with is Wade, Boz, and LeBron. Everybody else, you know, can be interchangeable by the way they're playing. And I didn't think he did enough of that. And I think part of that was he didn't do what Popovich did to pair teams. He didn't play those lineups like that, some of those other people that he had up there in suits, to really give them the trust to be able to help them in this point. The other thing about Dwayne Wade is I think Dwayne needs to do what Ginobili did. I think he needs to lose lose 15 pounds. I think he's at a point in his career where if you look at Wade, he looks heavy. He don't have the lift. He needs to lose about 15 pounds. He needs to do it. I think Ginobili realized that. Lose some weight. When you get older, lose some weight so that you can get some of that quickness back. He might need to play, you know, the 25 minutes measured in different ways so he can be effective. But he definitely got to look losing weight. I think Boston got to gain some weight. The one thing I love about Justin when he said is that they got to get back. If they're going to be successful moving forward, the percentages of the touches and how you run the offense will have to move LeBron and have to move more to Boston, and more Boston scoring has got to be happening closer to the paint over time. So still have the ability to shoot three, but he's got to get back to being more like a Toronto boss, where when they struggle to score and run, they give him the ball, he gets to the rim and gets to the free throw line. And that's part of the game they got to get him back to and feature him more in that second unit with Wade to give them the scoring opportunities when you're sitting LeBron. I think some of that stuff Spoelstra's going to have to do in addition to they're going to have to up their talent around them. But I think the way they play Boston is going to have to change. I think Wade's going to have to
agree. Man, I agree.
You agree? Can I hear what you agree with? Do you really feel like LeBron James didn't have enough talent around him this year? Because I keep hearing that from commentators, and I'm flabbergasted with the notion.
I'm saying to beat the Spurs. He probably had enough talent to beat 95% of the teams he's going to face. But to beat
who
that
different?
Spurs team.
Who, other than Mike Miller, who was different on the team?
That Mike
they beat him just last
game.
Year with the same team.
But you know
same
what?
Court.
Whenever you put Mike Miller on the court, he produced. The rest of those cats were up and down like Dow Jones. But you have Phil's question. So let Phil go. Phil, answer your question. And then we'll come back to you, Josh.
Yeah, well, I was saying I agree. I agree with Bosch needing to get more of his shots close to the basket. You know, I mentioned before the final started, this season Bosch averaged roughly 3 free throw attempts a game, whereas his last 2 or 3 seasons in Toronto, he was getting to the line, you know, 8 to 9 times a game. He was in the top 10 in the league in terms of free throw attempts. And so towards the end of that Indiana series, you saw him being more aggressive. He was getting to the line 6 to 10 times a game. To me, that's kind of the barometer of success. If Bosch is, you know, shooting so many outside shots, he's got to be a very good – I mean, he's very confident shooting the outside shot now. He is. But to your point, Devon, I think they're at their best when he has a presence to kind of bring more balance to their offense.
So Justin, back over to you. I'm going to let you hit a couple points, but I got a couple I want to hit you with because I think you're moving down a line I'm going to push you on this. I want you to play Spo's advisor because you talked a little bit about it. So you obviously got opinions about what adjustments Spo could have made. If you were talking to Spo, what adjustments would you make to do some of the things I think you want to do? You said you want to get Chalmers up. So what adjustments would you have made to create those moments for that you think they should have been doing?
So first and foremost, I wouldn't have rolled Rashad Lewis as long as Spo rolled Rashad Lewis. Rashad Lewis has been worthless since his 2010 finals appearance with the Orlando Magic. Okay. He had a couple big threes in the series against Indiana. Why that allows you, you know, to start in the NBA finals and average just as many shots as your third superstar on Chris Bosh is beyond me, first and foremost.
Who would you have started, Justin? Who would you have started, Haslam?
I would have started UD, the leader of that team before LeBron got there. The guy who can hit an open 10-footer and can defend anybody. I would have ran my normal offense that got me there 4 years in a row. I wouldn't have deviated from the plan and went straight Cleveland on them and let LeBron get the ball and everybody else get the HE double hockey sticks out the way. I would have took LeBron off the ball. I would have took LeBron off the ball and use him to set screens and possibly roll in a pick-and-pop situation or a pick-and-roll situation so he could get the ball when he's moving as opposed to getting the ball when he's stagnant, which allows the defense to set up for him. I would have let Mario Chalmers do the job that he's done the past 3 years that led them to two championships, and I would have allowed him to actually get his rhythm and bring the ball up the court and get everybody else involved, which is what he's known to do. Mario Chalmers didn't just struggle this postseason. Mario Chalmers happened to have career lows in assists and points this season because they let LeBron James take that load away from him, which led to LeBron not being as effective. So if you ask me, I would have stayed the course. Spo got too smart for his own good with those advanced metrics and said, you know what, I'm desperate. I need LeBron to do it all. And when LeBron has to do it all, he's proven time and time again he's not who you think he is. Which leads me to a bigger point. We talk about LeBron like he's the best ever, like he could beat Michael Jordan, he could beat this guy, he could beat that guy. As great as LeBron James is in every facet of the game, he's not the best scorer in the league. Durant is, possibly Melo. He's not the best rebounder in the league. Joakim Noah is, possibly Roy Hibbert. He's not the best defender in the league. Paul George is. Like, we're talking about LeBron as great as he is, as if he's the best thing since sliced bread, but he's not the best at anything. He's top five in probably everything, which allows him to be great, but he's not the best at one single thing in the entire league. So you can't give him the ball and say, get out the way, like Doug Collins did with Mike, and expect for him to produce W's for you. You need to go with what got you all the things and all the accolades that you've achieved over the years, and that was team basketball. He's made Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh look like Justin Page and Phil Thompson. Like, he's made them become average ball players. How can you make a Hall of Famer an average ball player? For everybody that says Miami had no help this year, you got to be kidding me. They had all the help they had last year when they won the championship and the year before that. They just changed how they operate, and they let everything go through LeBron. And when everything goes through LeBron, LeBron plays, again, for lack of a better term, hero ball. It's not necessarily hero ball because LeBron doesn't take every shot, but it's hero ball in the sense that he has the ball 80% of the time, and it doesn't allow other players to get in a rhythm. And that's their biggest failure. Nobody was in a rhythm against a San Antonio team that everybody was in a rhythm.
All right. So, Phil, you heard that. What's your rebuttal to that? I can almost sense it in your voice. I can almost have it coming through the phone. What's your rebuttal?
No rebuttal. I was just curious to Justin, you know, would have played instead of Lewis. And, you know, I think Haslam would have been a good choice. Also,
I did call
for
Haslam.
Yeah, I mean, but I look at what Spoelstra had to work with, and, you know, just like Popovich went with Diaw, he changed his lineup throughout the series and played Diaw. You know, I think he started him the second or third game, and that worked out really good for them. You know, Spoelstra went with Lewis against the Pacers, and, you know, he tried to ride that right wave. You know, just like he bet on Ray Allen in the fifth game, and Ray Allen did not have a good game. And I think as a coach, you try what you can. And, you know, I do think LeBron James is one of the best players in a lot of the categories that Justin mentioned. You can argue that he's not the best facilitator. Maybe Chris Paul is, maybe so-and-so is. But, you know, like Justin said, he's in the top five of everything. And I think the way that the Heat played gives them the best chance to win, especially given that the Dwayne Wade this year is not the Dwayne Wade we saw the last couple of years. And, you know, I think Spoelstra kind of figured that out when we figured that out.
That's right.
You know, but I think that, I mean, I'm not sure if there's a move that Spoelstra could have made to win the series. Perhaps there's some moves that Justin mentioned, you know, that clearly probably would have worked better than what he did. But I'm not sure that would have got them to game six or seven. Maybe game six, probably not game seven. I think the Spurs were just a better team. And, you know, I'm not sure what the Heat should do in the offseason here. You know, in some ways, it's going to depend on what LeBron decides to do. But, you know, in my heart of hearts, I kind of feel like, you know, like Justin said, they have enough to win because they have the best player in the world. And they also have, you know, two guys that are going to be Hall of Famers in Bosh and Wade, presumably coming back. And if they put another piece or two around them, you know, the Mike Miller thing kills me a little bit because Mike Miller, I believe, I looked at this earlier in the week when I was prepping. I think Mike Miller played like 75 to 80 games this year, maybe every game this year. And he played really well for a team that made the playoffs. So one could argue, and Mike Miller was looking like he was done last year in the postseason. He came alive for a few games here and there, but he was a guy that was laying on the bench like Larry Bird, you know, nursing his back to give you 15 minutes. But in some ways, there was something familiar about what he brought to the team last year, and that was missing. And Battier, another year older, just was not able to give you what he gave in the last couple of years.
Guys, Mike Miller did not make that. He didn't make them champions to go to losing every game from 15 points or more that they lost in the finals. Mike Miller was a good, solid fifth option and three-point shooter. But Mike Miller's not the reason they lost by 15 or more in all four losses in the NBA Finals.
But
you
Mike
can't
Miller
look at a role player to go from a win to a loss and that margin of victory being so great. It's not Ray Allen.
The reason they lost that is because they missed a ton of open shots. I mean, I don't think you can list one thing more that, like, the reason why they lost because guys like Cole, guys like Chalmers, guys like Rashard Lewis, guys like Ray Allen, they didn't make as many open jump shots as they normally make, and the Spurs did. Honestly, I think it boils down to three or four made shots, that makes a game a 5-point game versus a 12 or 13-point game.
And that's where we have to agree to disagree. This game was not won, this series was not won or lost by missed shots by the Miami Heat. It was the pure dominance of the San Antonio Spurs and the Heat's lack of ability to stop them. And the reason San Antonio made shots and Miami didn't is because they gave up good shots to get great shots, and they got every shot that they wanted, where Miami was forced to shoot shots that they didn't want or they weren't good enough to take. And that's the vast difference in our both your and my analysis of how the game played out.
What I would look at, and the reason why I'm saying that is that it's all about trust. So when the Spurs made those passes, folks made the shot. When Miami was moving the ball, but when you made the pass, people weren't making the shot. Then you hesitate about making the pass. You're like,
they
rather
weren't really
this,
moving.
This good, look, I'm just going to say, a thing that looked like a good shot when a person who just went 0 for 3 is no longer a good shot. I better take this shot that is probably not a good shot, but I might make this because this person just went 0 for 3. It's a trust thing when you pass. When you pass to a guy like Miller last year, and this is why I say Miller is important, whenever you put him in, he produced. He's open. He's shooting. Now, you can say his back was bad, whatever, but what he did was he was a shot maker, and he energized them because it was short runs. He could stop a run. So, you know, if San Antonio went a run, he hits a three, that's a stop of a run. With this one, Patty Mills makes 3-4 shots in a row, there's no rebuttal. Right? There's no rebuttal. And then now you
the
lose
first,
all
that
moves.
First game, Danny Green was 0-for-5 before 0-for-4, whatever it was. He didn't hit a shot until the fourth quarter. And, yeah, they did trust him. I'll give you that. They trusted him to continue to shoot. And when LeBron went out, he hit those two threes to catapult the lead. But if you think about it, Miami, they didn't move the ball like you're saying they moved the ball. LeBron dribbled the HE double hockey sticks out of the basketball and made a play last second to get an open shot. That's different than swinging the ball around the perimeter, getting the defense off their rocker, making them unbalanced, and getting the shot that you want because the defense is off balance as opposed to one guy isolating and then creating offense through that. I think Pop's system Pop's system was far better than Spo's system, which was letting LeBron James get the ball and get the heck out the way at the end of the day. That's what the Heat relied on.
And what I will say is, and then we're about to move on to another part here, is what I will say is that I just don't think he had the option to play. And so, there, you know, Pop had more and more to go to. Because when Danny Green struggled last year, he didn't have Patty Mills to go to. This year he got Patty Mills, Joseph, Bellinelli. You know, he has five options, and then he can move Diaw out to the same spot to be interchangeable. So last year he only had one option. This year for that same thing, he's got four options so he can play against that. Miami just didn't have those options. I think we got some good stuff going here. We're going really well with this. This thing is flowing really nicely. We're going to take a few minutes here to pay a few bills with our dog of the week and take care of that and come back and talk about some more basketball. You listen to the Real Sports Guys, realsportsguys.com. We're on with D. Wills with Phil T. and our man Justin Page, NBA guy, who is bringing the noise tonight. Here we go with Resistance Digital.
Now we're going to get into our Resistance Digital Dog of the Week. Resistance Digital Solutions. Are you tired of running to the boys in blue? Are you done with listening to sales staff trying to upsell you technology that you don't need? We've all been there. So what did the Real Sports Guys do? We contacted Resistance Digital Solutions for all our technology needs. They are not there to meet sales quotas or make profit margins. They simply just want to sell you what you need at a fair price. From iPads to PCs to flat screens, TVs, or intricate home theater systems, they customize every solution based on your needs. Check out their website at www.resistancedigital.com or email them at sales@resistancedigital.com for your custom technology solutions today.
All right, real sports guys, here we go. This is Resistance Digital Dog of the Week. We're having a good time. Justin, Yuen, you got to give us your Resistance Digital Dog of the Week.
Man, my dog of the week is Kawhi Leonard. He locked up LeBron James. He won the NBA championship.
Yeah.
He won the NBA Finals MVP. He honestly had me contemplating, I may take Kawhi Leonard over LeBron James. I know it sounds crazy, and everybody's going to call me a LeBron hater. I think LeBron's the best player on the planet, but Kawhi Leonard proved otherwise this week. And for that reason alone, if you can be in the same conversation with the king, self-proclaimed, by the way, Kawhi Leonard, he gets my vote 10 times out of 10. NBA Finals MVP, he locked up the king. He matched the king point for point, averaged more points in the last three games, won by double digits in every game. I could not fathom anybody. I would expect both D-Wills and Phil T to agree that Kawhi Leonard is the dog of the week.
Oh, my goodness. We are loving it. He's on fire tonight. Phil T, you know what that means. That's right. Come to it.
I'm going to go with Tony Gwynn. Tony Gwynn was a guy that I really looked up to as a baseball player growing up. This is a guy that hit 370 one year. He hit over 390 in the strike shortened season. Really the only player to really flirt with hitting 400 here in a modern era. Since Ted Williams, this is a guy that won 8 batting championships. His career batting average was 340. That was his average. That's even
wow.
Below and above. First ballot Hall of Famer. You don't see that a lot in baseball. You know, baseball has this really weird Hall of Fame fraternity with the baseball writers voting. And it says a lot in this day and age if you can be a first ballot Hall of Famer. Sorry to lose him so early. I believe he was in his mid-50s. And, you know, I just remember a young Tony Gwynn, a guy who stole 50 bases one year. You know, people think about him towards the end of his career. But this is a guy that was drafted, you know, as a basketball player by the San Diego Clippers when he came out of school. So, my dog of the week is Tony Gwynn, and you know, clearly thoughts and prayers are with his family.
That's a great one. You know, class player, class act, and you never hear so many media folks talk so glowingly about someone in the way in which he treated them during his time. I mean, people are just there. I mean, not usually just a whole bunch of players, but then media people coming out talking about the relationship they had with him. And how open he was is incredible. That's a great one. I talked a little bit about Chuck Noll early on, and I'm just going to give him a special dog. But I also wanted to make sure that I recognize Popovich. I was like Phil. I was like, what makes this guy tick? Like, who is this guy? And when I saw him sitting on that bench just exhausted, you know, after probably one of the most devastating losses in any coach's career, the way he lost last year. I mean, basically he had the champagne in his mouth and he took the bottle out of his hand. And just to see his reaction, he just reminded me of one of my other favorite coaches, Chuck Daly. I mean, just knowing how to push the button, knowing how to do what I talk about, talent development. Because there's not enough talent development in sports. We talk about that in education. We talked about that in building careers and teams, that at a certain point, you just can't look for the LeBron James type of folks. You can't look for the Tim Duncan type of folks. You also have to, if you don't win, you've got to do some talent development, capacity building with folks who don't yet know they're great. And what he's done with Kawhi Leonard, who is a fantastic young player, but the way he instills confidence, what he's done with Patty Mills to instill confidence, what he did to help rebuild not just, and I think Justin hit this earlier, is not just instilling confidence, but he puts these little systems in where coaches are working on them to develop their game all throughout the season. he's just a fantastic coach, unbelievable person, and I got so much respect for him, and it'll be hard pressed to bet against him again. So that was Dog of the Week brought to us by Resistance Digital Solutions. Check out our guy, LR. You can get to him by going to our website. He does incredible service. A lot of referrals we have. I've just been pleased with the work that he's done. Make sure you support our sponsors. Again, we're on the Frederick's Founding Gateway. You can get to him, get to them as well through our realsportsguys.com and click on the icon for Frederick County, and that'll take you right to those folks. But it's great. We're gonna I'm gonna twist a little bit in here. I want to finish a little bit on this, some of this NBA stuff, because I think there's some stuff that just been hitting before we transition into some of our talk about this 84 draft. I want to spend a few minutes on it. Is, you know, if you think about where they go from here, you know, one of the things that happened to the Pistons, I'm a big 30 for 30 guy, and the Pistons stuff, is when they lost Rick Mahorn to the expansion draft, and that kind of changed the chemistry of the team. I'm going to give you one person to choose from each team that is a person they can't afford to lose if they're going to continue to go. Phil, I want you to say, think for the Spurs or for the Heat, who's someone they can't afford that would change kind of their chemistry, given where they are?
I would say for the Heat, believe it or not, I think that it's Chris Anderson, Birdman. Birdman's a guy that I'm not sure how many other NBA teams he'd be starting on. I'm not sure how many other NBA teams that he'd be getting 25 to 30 minutes for in crunch time and, you know, very important games. But that speaks to the lack of depth that the Miami Heat have in terms of big guys. They just can't even afford to lose him, even though he's probably a year older. For the Spurs, wow, it's a great question. I can't believe I'm going to say this, but, I mean, assuming that their top eight players are protected, so that kind of takes out guys like, you know, Tim Duncan if he comes back. I mean, that you're looking at the fringe guys. I would say Boris Diaw probably. Here's a guy that if you are starting a new team, I believe he's a guy you can build around. You know, he won't be your top one or two players on your team, but he's a person that can really complement. And he plays so unselfishly. I think if there was an expansion draft, he'd be somebody that a lot of teams would be interested in. So, because Boris Diaw gave them an aspect that they didn't have last year. Patty Mills did too, but I think more with Diaw, they had a big that they could put out there that couldn't be exposed like last year's Splitter and Matt Bonner could be.
All right, Justin, who do you say from Spurs and the Heat?
If I had to say, the Spurs, while I agree with Phil T, they can't afford to lose Diaw. Diaw was very, very valuable to them. I don't think they can afford to lose Splitter. Skip Bayless's favorite guy, Tiago Splitter. Hopefully I did this in justice with the Splitter. Tiago Splitter, to me, was that inside force that wasn't scared of anybody on Miami. And I think he gave them the energy they needed and the inside presence they needed to push them over the hump this year. I think his evolution from last year to this year was the difference why they did not win last year and they won this year. Miami, they can't afford to lose LeBron James. He's the only player that matters. D-Wade can go. Chris Bosh can go. Everybody can go. As long as you have LeBron James, you're going to win 60 games. You're going to make it to the finals. He proved that in Cleveland time and time again. He either got to the finals or won 60 games the last 2 years in Cleveland. Other than that, Cleveland, Miami can do whatever they want as long as they don't lose LeBron James. So to me, that's a very basic question.
But we're talking expansion drafts. I mean, typically in expansion draft,
we don't have any new teams coming in, so we're not going to have an expansion draft. So, you know,
it's a hypothetical question, Justin.
If the Heat had to lose.
I would say.
So you baited me in. You mentioned.
Yes, it's a hypothetical question.
You mentioned, Phil T, if the top eight players are protected. Birdman's a top eight player for the Heat. So your hypothetical answer to this hypothetical question is somewhat, you know, skewed only because Chris Anderson is a top eight player for the Heat.
It's still
so
a better
if we're looking
than LeBron
at top
James.
Eight players, if we're looking honestly at top eight players, I can't use Mario Chalmers. I can't use Ray Allen. I can't use Birdman.
It doesn't have to be a top eight player. If you think they need to keep Mario Chalmers, he's a free agent, right? I mean, most of those guys are available. So you think they need to re-sign Mario?
I do think they need
they
Mario.
Better?
And I think that they won two championships with Mario. And Mario was a key part of what I won. And when Mario was not a key part, they lost. And they didn't just lose. They got their ass handed to them in dramatic fashion. They didn't do any. They didn't play Miami Heat basketball when Mario Chalmers was not playing Mario Chalmers' role. So, if you pin me to a wall, my answer then is Mario Chalmers for the Heat. For the Spurs, I don't care who you lose. They've got such a system. They've got such consistency, and they've got such great leadership from Buford and Pop all the way down. They can lose anybody, and it will be okay. They made Kawhi Leonard be talked about in the same breath as LeBron James because he's now NBA Finals MVP. He now locked up the King. He now had a better series than the King when going head-to-head. So you got to put Kawhi Leonard up there as the person that the Miami Heat San Antonio Spurs cannot lose because he's the future face of their franchise.
All right. So I would agree, two people that I think they can't afford to lose, and I think the D.I. one I think is a pretty popular one. I agree with you on that. I think he's so versatile, and he's only getting better in the way you can leverage him. I think the other person they can't afford to lose because of just the jump he's made and the way in which he provides relief for Parker, again, is I think Patty Mills. I think Patty Mills broke through.
Yeah.
I liked him from his days in college. I thought this guy is a special guy. He's got some talent. And I was surprised it took so long for him to catch on. But he's a guy that I think the Heat should go after, to tell you the truth. I mean, he's a free agent. I think the Heat, I think, Indiana, he's the kind of guy that if I was him, I would go after if they had the ability to go get him. He could do it. On the Heat, I think there are a lot of guys you can let go. But I do agree with Birdman. And folks like that because he's long. And if you can fill in some of these other parts and you bring him back to help defensively and be that active person, he's another person that they got to get him repaired to get his energy back. And he wasn't getting those 50-50 balls like I like, but I think you can get him re-energized. I think he gives you something. He's someone I like to keep in free agency if I'm the Heat. So, you know, we'll see how, you know, there's been a lot of free agency talk when it comes here. But sometimes, like we learned from Miller, I think Miller's departure is bigger than we think. Sometimes you don't think that really matters, but there's a chemistry thing there. And that's why I say it's important when I use Rick Mahorn. It wasn't just what he provided on the back end of defense. He provided some leadership and some stuff in the locker room. He provided some chemistry that, you know, is not part of the front line players, but you know, when you're around teams enough, it's not the LeBron James or the Duncans and all. It's some of those other guys that keep people laughing, that keeps the long trip going. They know what buttons to push. They aren't afraid to. What makes UD so great? He's not afraid to be the one that yells at LeBron. You need that old cat who can do that. because you couldn't do that. Juwan Howard can no longer do that. As long as you don't play that many minutes, you can't bring him on to yell. So UD did that really well. So those blue guys are guys that you miss that you need to really think about. I want to spend a little bit of time here around history. And we don't have to spend much time with it, but there's been some great sport documentaries happening. Like, this has been the age of the sport documentary, but that 1984 draft one has just been kind of fascinating. And just want to get briefly just your opinions on that draft and just quickly some folks that people don't often talk about that draft that you like. So, Justin, I'll start with you real quick and then go to Phil.
Well, I like the 84 draft. I think it had some of the best players we've seen in our lifetime. I'm an 80s baby. I was born in 1980. Therefore, mm-hmm. I saw the lights of the great Michael Jordan and Charles Barkley. But I feel as if 80s babies and everybody near me, meaning 75 to 85, a good decade, I think we all focus on the past way too much. Why don't we ever look at right now? Why is it everything was better then? And I honestly believe that the current elite class of the NBA, which happened to have been drafted in 2003, I would argue is equally great to the 84 class. I don't think that we need to look at ESPN's documentary of the 84 draft and give them any kudos other than that they're of the one and only Michael Jeffrey Jordan. I think the 03 class with LeBron, Melo, Chris Bosh, and D-Wade, I think that's equally comparable to the 84 draft. And, Kyle Korver, who just set the three-point record in the league for my Atlanta Hawks, who was drafted 51 in the 2003 draft, or even Kendrick Perkins, who was a champion in Boston Celtics and has led OKC to greener pastures as 27th pick. And you and Phil Tees seem to be favorite guy. Boris Diaw happened to be drafted in 2003. So, well, I think the 84 draft was great, and I think it gets a lot of recognition due to ESPN's current 30 for 30 that they had on that draft. Just because Jordan was in that draft doesn't make it the best. And just because it happened in the 80s doesn't make it the best, even though I'm an 80s baby. I really appreciate the 2003 draft and others, but I chose to talk about the 03 draft because I think it was the best draft I've ever seen and witnessed in my days.
Now, I'm going to see you. I'll come back. Phil, go, Phil.
So the question was, who in the 84 draft that we really liked outside of the big dogs like Olajuwon and Jordan, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, so for me, it's Otis Stewart. Otis Stewart was one of my favorite
players. Oh, man, you stole it. Go ahead. Go ahead. Do your thing.
Yeah, so Otis Stewart was a first-round draft pick. The ninth overall pick, picked by the Kings back in Kansas City, Kings. I remember him from those great Rocket teams of the mid-90s. He won a chip, with that first championship with the Kings, or Hakeem Olajuwon. But then during that second championship season, they actually moved him. But he was part of the Clyde Drexler trade. So he actually didn't get a second ring with the Rockets. So this is a guy that made an all-star team or two. He averaged 20 and 10 earlier in his career. And to me, he was just a really solid guy. I mean, he shot 56% from the field during his 7 or 8 seasons with the Rockets, still a record for them. He was a really reliable guy. He'd get you 12-8, 15-10 during those years. And just somebody who, at times took pressure off Olajuwon because he was 6'11". He was a big guy that he could guard multiple positions. So Otis Stewart's a guy that stands out for me.
Well, I think you hit some really good ones. One of the things that Oathorpe was mine. I had a couple other ones, but the one, and I was surprised because I had a couple. Michael Cage is one, but I'll go back and I'll come back to it. But I'm here just because of the way Justin just came up. My other guy is out of your place down in Atlanta, Kevin Willis. Man, Kevin Willis was a beast in it with the Hawks. I mean, seven-footer. He was physical. He'd go at it. You know, that was a team with Doc and Dominique and Kevin Willis. I mean, Kevin used to go to work on folks. Came out of Michigan State. I just used to love his game and felt like, you know, he played an era with some great centers. I feel like he never really got the love he deserved as a center. He brought his workhorse game all the time, and I don't think he really got the love he really had. He averaged what, about 17 points, 11 rebounds. But you know, anybody who battled against him with some great Hawks teams, of which he was a centerpiece, knew that he was going to go to work on them. He was going to go to work
guys,
on them. So,
guys, Oathorpe was a lottery pick. Kevin Willis was a lottery pick. Neither one of them, as great as they both were at their respective roles, they didn't deserve to be lottery picks. Kyle Korver, who owns a three-point championship.
Kyle
Korver has made more consecutive three-pointers than anybody to ever play the game. And he was drafted in the second round as a 51 pick in 2003.
In this one alone, I'm gonna shut this down because we're gonna transition for the final moment. Because I'm gonna bring you back. But just in this one alone, for what you're talking about, and I love that draft. You're talking about Olajuwon, Jordan, Barkley. You talking about Stockton in that draft?
Stockton at 16, I'll give you.
You got Michael Cage. Is one of the most incredible rebounders that people don't know along with Willis. You talking about Vern Fleming was a solid ball player and didn't get a lot of love on that as well. I mean, you just keep. I mean, you go hell. He didn't even play and didn't even get a chance to play. Eric Turner would have been great in the draft.
Oh,
you talking about? And God, he was one of the top guys coming out.
Did you just hit me with Eric Turner?
Jerome Kersey was the second last person drafted in that draft. I mean, there's so much other talent there. You lost your mind. But we love having you.
Yeah, Kevin Willis is a guy that averaged 18-15 one year.
Yeah.
Kevin Willis was a good player. He made multiple All-Star teams. He averaged 18-15 one year. I mean, he's a guy who deserved to be in the lottery. I mean, if you look at
Eric
a lot
Turner?
Of these guys that were drafted, now Eric Turner was a very weak part of the argument.
Great
I was
trying
to hush the mind when he brought up Eric Turner because that's a homer.
I just noticed that Eric Turner happened to be drafted by the Detroit Pistons, and I'm like, okay, I get it, but. Come on, guys. Like,
he got the worst draw ever. When he got drafted by the Pistons, I just shook my head. I'm like, you'll never see playing time with Zeke there. But you hit it all. This has been a great one. You know, now, we do this segment. That's very important, Justin. Now, it's called The Last Word, and it's brought to us by XL Academics. But I got to let you know, if you run over, I got to cut it off. But you're a special guest, and I got to give you the last word. I will let you know that you're getting close to time. But I want to give you the last word, brother, because we love having you on. You got about 30 seconds. Tell your thoughts.
I love to be on. I appreciate all the fans, all the supporters of Real Sports Guys. I know I can be a little over the top sometimes. Even when I don't use words I shouldn't use, I spell them out, and I shouldn't do that either. And thank you for all the fans for sticking with us. Real Sports Guys, I thank you guys for the opportunity to showcase my talents and my basketball knowledge. I say go Hawks. I say go Falcons. And I appreciate the opportunity, and please have me back whenever I can so I can help school, one, the game changer who is scared of me tonight, two, my boy Phil T, who makes sure I'm appropriate, and D. Wills, I appreciate you, man. Appreciate you guys. Had a great time. Let's go.
That's it. Where can they find you, Justin, really quick?
They can find me at JustinPage80 at Twitter, or Real Sports Guys, Justin Page, JPage80. Check me out.
All right, y'all. We're doing this. Phil T, Justin Page, D. Wills. It's been good, y'all. Until next week, we're out.